Also, Jonathan will be giving some further discussions related to this topic tomorrow in one of the panel sessions. So it's a little embarrassing. After a few decades, we still don't have a concrete prediction in string theory, other than the existence of gravity, perhaps. So, and I think it's about time to try to change that. I mean, we have been trying, obviously, but we haven't really succeeded too much. And I would like to present some work here, which takes a small step in that direction. So the idea here is to study the realizations of grand unified theories in the context of F theory. And basically, the idea is that in general, in trying to construct phenomenology out of string theory, we have had the embarrassment of riches. We have so many ways of getting the real world that we don't know which one to focus on. And so you can take one model and focus on this and get numbers out or the other one. But none of them is really convincing in the sense that we have too many choices. So therefore, it's hard to have any reliable prediction. Especially with the advent of duality era, we have learned that there's even more possibilities and therefore more headache in some sense. So what is the idea that's being missed here is the fact is a very simple, important experimental input which forces unify. Now, this fact, the grand unification, has been used in string theory, obviously, in the context of heterotic string. But in even the heterotic string is somewhat challenging to get really grand unified theories in ways I will explain. And in the context of string dualities, D-brains, and so on, the idea of grand unified theories is not that natural. So to focus on grand unification as a cornerstone of phenomenology turns out to basically reduce the landscape to a finite set with one extra assumption. And that extra assumption simply is that the Planck physics and God physics decouple. Just that statement that you can have a decoupled theory of gauge theory of grand unification, which at least in principle you could have taken M Planck to infinity, is a very strong restriction. And if you just make this assumption, it turns out you have very few possibilities. And this is the corner of the landscape which I think is very natural to focus on. And the things I'm going to talk about is related to this assumption. So given the limited time I have here, let me just present the results without getting into the details. First statement is that the minimal F theory, grand unified theory, comes from a unique class of models, which although it has some discrete choices and some continuous parameters, it is sufficiently robust that it leads to specific predictions. This proceeds through an SU5 grand unified theory in 8 dimensions, living on 7 brains, broken to MSSM group in 4 dimensions by an internal U1 hypercharge flux. This is our usual hypercharge, and it's a flux turned on in the internal dimension. And this mechanism is not available in heterotic strings, because if you did this in heterotic strings, it would Higgs that U1. So this is a new mechanism, and that's why a lot of things I'm going to say has not been explored before in string theory, precisely because this was not available. If you go for non-minimal gut, you have to go to a fifth grand unified scenario. For example, if you want to have a SO10 gate symmetry, unification in 8 dimension, you'll end up in 4 dimension going through a fifth SU5 gut, not the usual gut. So you have SU5 cross U1. So the matter fields and the Higgs arise on Riemann surfaces in the internal geometry. And they are distinguished by a very simple condition, that the net flux, the net hypercharge flux, whether it vanishes or not over, then distinguishes Higgs versus matter. This turns out to simply solve the double triple splitting in an elegant way. The mu problem is solved by having the Higgs up and Higgs down on distinct matter curves, which is also related to this double triple splitting problem solution. And if these curves do not intersect, we naturally find mu is 0. And if they do intersect, in one scenario, we find the hierarchically small mu. So what we find is that if you the mu term is going to be given by the gut scale, from an exponentially suppressed term, where the suppression factor is a hierarchy between gut and Planck. So there's this parameter, which is m gut divided by alpha gut times m Planck, which is over there of 0.07. So there's a suppression of the form exponential of minus 1 over epsilon to the 2 gamma, where we cannot determine gamma except to have a range for it, unfortunately. And that depends on what is the normal geometry for our brain. So that's the amount of knowledge we cannot fix. This could certainly give values which are reasonable as far as phenomenology goes. So we also find that in this scenario that there are naturally light neutrinos. And in some sense, it's robust. We follow two different paths, and either way gave you the same estimates for the light neutrinos, which is right in the right range to get the accepted range for the light neutrinos. One scenario, we get direct neutrino masses with masses of this order, 0.5 times 10 to minus 2 plus minus 0.5 electron volts. In that scenario, we had the Majorana component of the neutrino mass is identical to zero. In the second one, we have a modified CISA mechanism with light neutrinos, again, of the right range, about 0.2 times 10 to plus or minus 1.5 eV. But now we also have heavy neutrinos at about 10 to the 12 GeV, plus or minus 1.5 in the exponent, which is lower than what the naive CISA would have predicted. The dangerous proton violating terms, these are the quartic terms in the superpotential, are suppressed through a related mechanism to the double triple splitting problem. Again, having to do with the fact that the Higgs up and Higgs down are different curves. So the nice thing in this whole thing is that you take one thing and that solves two or three of these problems together. That's why we believe that there's something here. That is, we didn't cook up solutions for each problem independently. We did one thing and it automatically solved a few of them in a row. So the next statement is that we find, so one of the big challenges in grand unified theory is that the mass relations are not quite correct, the predictions that they come, but they are better for the heavy generation ones. The heaviest one, the third generation, has a good mass relation. And we explain this simply as the analog of the Aronson-Bohm effect for this internal geometry. That gives a qualitative explanation of why the more massive generation should satisfy the mass relations better. Supersymmetry breaking, here should be the word breaking, can be communicated through the gauge mediation mechanism. And the same mechanism which solves the mu problem can and provides the light neutrino masses can also lead to small mass for the messenger fields. And various mechanisms can, in principle, be used to solve the texture structure to the Yukawa couplings. And the most natural in this context is the fact that we have natural discrete symmetries in our geometry, which is forced on us again. We didn't put it in by hand, which involves discrete groups of wild groups of exceptional groups, and in particular, EA. OK, so this is basically the summary of what we obtained. So here, I'm going to just focus on some of these. So first, I will review F-theory compactification leading to n equals to 1 supersymmetry in 4 dimensions. I discussed the condition for decoupling of gravity from grand unified theory dynamics. I talk about gauge symmetry breaking mechanism and the U1 hypercharge flux. I will present the minimal SU5 MSSM gut model. I talk about the solution to various problems I mentioned, and I'll finally talk about the neutrino masses. So, in the context of F theory, basically, which is a strong coupling completion of type 2B, we can obtain n equals to 1 supersymmetry in 4 dimension if we compactify the F theory on elliptic fourfolds, which means in the type 2B context, we have a 6-dimensional internal geometry. So the gravity will come from gravity lives in 10 dimensions, which from a 6-dimensional internal theory. And the gauge theory is realized by where the elliptic vibration becomes degenerate. Depending on what kind of elliptic vibration you have, you can get the AD gauge symmetries. And this gives you the 8D gauge systems living on the 7 brains. When the 7 brains intersect, in 6 dimension, in other words, you get the matter fields. This corresponds to 2-dimensional internal subspaces of the internal geometry, in other words, Riemann surfaces. And at points where 3 of these 7 brains intersect, the points in the internal geometry are 4D space. Some you get the Yukawa coupling. So you have the hierarchy of these structures. So the internal geometry looks something roughly like this. You have a 3-dimensional complex dimensional, 3-complex dimensional manifold, B3 I'm calling, which is the base of the elliptic vibration of F theory. Then you have four-dimensional objects. These are, I'm denoting by S and S prime. These are the seven brains, which fill the four-dimensional subspace. And they intersect on Riemann surfaces. That's where you get your matter and your Higgs. And at the point intersection, you get the Yukawa couplings. The type of gauge symmetry depends on what kind of elliptic vibration you have. But if you have AD singularity, you get the corresponding one. You can also get the non-simple-based ones if you wish by considering outer automorphisms, but it won't be necessary here. The matter arises by local Higgsing, and that's a crucial point in string theory, actually. It's the fact that it hasn't been emphasized enough, in my opinion, that we don't get arbitrary matter in string theory. If there's an important prediction of string theory is that not every matter can arise, or at least we don't know how possibly to get all matter, all possible representations in string theory. And matter that we know how to get involves coming from an adjoint of a higher group. In other words, comes from local Higgsing, I would call. So what happens, the way you get matter in the context of seven brains, is that you have the seven brains which intersect the other seven brains. At the intersection point, you have a local gauge symmetry enhancement to one higher rank gauge group. And you would have gotten a natural higher dimensional gauge symmetry if they were parallel brains. But if they are not, you're actually locally Higgsing the gauge symmetry. And the matter that you get is therefore embedded in a higher adjoint representation. That's simple fact. So for example, if you want to get SUN, if you have n of these seven brains and intersects another seven brain, what happens is that SUN enhanced by one higher rank to SUN plus one. If that's what happens, you get one fundamental representation living on the brain. So that we are familiar with in the context of perturbative string theory, for example, how you get bifundamentals. Or if the SUN enhances to SON, which is the second diagram here, in that case, you get anti-symmetric representations, for example. Again, something we're familiar with this perturbative D brain. For SO2N, we can get matter in the fundamental representation by SON going one rank higher. This gives you fundamental representations. But sometimes, and only very rarely, I will add, you can get spinners. So for example, SO10 can go, instead of the usual path, can go the other way, enhance to E6. And this is why you can get spinner in SO10. It's very special for us. If you ask us, can I give you a spinner of SO20 in string theory? No, we cannot. These are among the very special magics of the representation that allow us to happen. It doesn't need an E8 gauge symmetry, or it doesn't need hadronic per se, which is the way we originally learned it in string theory. It just means this simple fact that SO10 can enhance to E6. And that's how spinner of SO10 is special for us. It's quite remarkable that spinner of SO10 is also special for our world, it seems, perhaps, for the grand unification. So these are, I think, very interesting circumstantial evidence pointing towards the things that we have learned in string theory. Yukawa couplings arise from one further enhancement where you have triple of these Riemann surfaces meeting. So for example, in the context of SUN, you can get fundamental, anti-fundamental, and singlet interacting by double enhancement of SUN going to SUN plus one and then to SUN plus two. And if you work it out, you find that you get two of these curves, like you have fundamental, anti-fundamental living on one brain, and the singlet one orthogonal direction, which is just intersecting these brains at a point. You can also get fundamental, fundamental, and the anti-symmetric representation complex conjugate meeting. But these things all would have to live on the same seven brain. These two enhancements are two different rank two enhancements. One of them goes to SU again. One of them is partly in SU direction and partly in SO direction. So for SU5, we might ask, how does that potentially work? Well, we might be interested in an interaction other than these two. And in particular, we also would need an interaction of 5, 10, 10. How would we get that? Well, it turns out that these won't give you that, but there is one special way this can happen for SU5, and that's through an enhancement through E6 again. So again, E6 comes out. Even though fundamental and anti-symmetric representation you can get perturbatively, you cannot get this interaction, which involves an epsilon tensor, using perturbative string theory. In perturbation theory, you will have a U1 extra U1 symmetry, which prevents these terms. So you have to do something which is not perturbative. And in this case, you need an E6 enhancement through strong coupling effect. That's what gives you the corresponding interaction. So the SU5, if it enhances the usual way, you get 5, 5, 10 bar. But you can also enhance in a way which gives you an E6 at the end. And that gives you the corresponding epsilon tensor that we need in gut theory. So somehow the exceptional groups are around us in the context of unification, and that's what is very simple to arrange in the context of F-theory or strong coupling type 2B. So as I mentioned, without making any further assumptions, the landscape is unwieldy. So we make one further assumption, which we think is reasonable. We're assuming, the statement is that the grand unified theory dynamics decouple from gravity. Let me say when this could not have been the case. For example, suppose for grand unified theories, the theory ended up not being asymptotically free. If the gut multiplets and so on had too much matter for whatever reason, then it could not have been decoupled from a more fundamental theory. That luckily is not the case for us, at least for typical grand unified theories. We have the gut theory is asymptotically free. So morally, it could be decoupled from gravity. That's basically what I'm meaning here, that in principle, you should have been able to decouple that sector of the theory from gravity, despite the fact that the Planck scale is not too far away from the gut scale. So it's not, I'm not trying to state M Planck to infinity, but I'm saying the geometry should be such that it could have been that M Planck could have been decoupled. And if you say that, the statement geometrically translates to a very simple mathematical statement that the seven-brain geometry should live on something that could be shrunk all the way to zero, should be possible to shrink to zero. The shrinkability of the seven-brain inside the base of the elliptic vibration is very restrictive and essentially gives you a unique choice of what that seven-brain geometry is, and that's a Del Pezzo geometry. So these are two-dimensional complex surfaces which mathematicians classified. They have a positive Chern class, and they can be shrunk. And there's some collection of these. There are like 10 of them. But actually, you can say in some sense there's only one of them, what's called the E8 version, which corresponds to a projective two-plane with 8-point blown up. All the other ones can be obtained from this bigger one by shrinking down various cycles. So there's one master one, which has E8 wild symmetry as its discrete symmetries. So how do we Higgs the grand unified theory to MSSM? And this is really, I think if I were to emphasize one fact about what we have found, is the importance of U1 hypercharged flux, which had been not available up to now. And the idea is this. If you start with grand unified theories, for example, SU5, if you want to break it to SU3 cross SU2 cross U1, the most obvious thing to do from field theory is that you take an adjoint representation, and that would naturally break it to SU3 cross SU2 cross U1. Well, typically, that's not available because there's no such adjoint representation. And for example, heterotic string, typically it's not there. And in our case, the fact that we have assumed that the gut dynamics decoupled from time also implies, in particular, as a corollary, there is no adjoint representation. So you just have, if you have a gut theory which has an SU5, let's say, living on the seven brain, how are you going to get, if you don't have any adjoint down in four dimension, how are you going to get the MSSM? How are you going to break it to MSSM? Well, there's this U1 hypercharge flux that you can turn on in the internal geometry. In some sense, you can think of that morally as the analog of the adjoint in four dimension where you compactify on flat toroid. That's roughly what it would have been. But now we are turning it on in the internal geometry of on the seven brain. And as I mentioned, this is not possible in the context of heterotic string, because it actually would Higgs the U1 in the context of heterotic string. So, and the reason this actually, you might, the idea that this can be done is related to a mechanism that was in a different context was discovered by Buchan et al. And in the present context was also noted independently by Weinhold also, is that the U1 flux, which lives on the seven brain, should be such that it should be trivial in the full six-dimensional geometry. So it lives on a four-dimensional part of six dimension, and it should be trivializable in the six dimension. Now, this might sound like a contradiction, because we have learned string dualities, whatever is true in one frame, it's by changing things through the other one. So why am I emphasizing that this is not possible in heterotic string, whereas we know F-theory and heterotic string are dual? Not so fast. It turns out when we say heterotic string and F-theory are dual, we mean the following statement. If you take heterotic string compactified in T2, it's equivalent to F-theory compactified in elliptic K3 over P1. If you did that to go to eighth dimension, then this would not have been available in F-theory either. So in other words, it turns out if you take the three-dimensional base of F-theory and it has a factor of a P1, if you split it up like that, then you will also Higgs the U1 also there. So you cannot do that. So this is the case which you don't have a dual hadronic description. You can just do it in F-theory. Now, this is what I just explained to you, that if the base is P1 times this, a two-dimensional sphere times the surface, then the duality with hadronic stream will be OK. But then you cannot have a flux, because if the flux is over here non-trivial, then it's also non-trivial in B. And that mechanism is not available. But if B, for example, was projective three-plane, then just the condition that you have a turn on a U1 configuration which preserves supersymmetry, which is a U1 instanton, it simply implies automatically that it doesn't Higgs the U1. So the Green-Schwarz mechanism is automatically satisfied. So it's not only U1 Higgs the U1, it's natural not to Higgs it in the context of F-theory. So it's the usual Green-Schwarz mechanism that does Higgs it, would have Higgs it. Here, the point is that there is no corresponding mode living in the box which would have Higgs it, precisely by the fact that the cohomology class is trivial. So there are two paths we can follow, therefore. If you start with an F-theory, you can ask, do I want the decoupling limit or not? And in this talk, I'm focusing on the answer, yes. We want to have a decoupling of gut from Planck dynamics. If you don't insist on that, you can have other surfaces being the surface of Southern Brain, which are not Del Pezzo. And then you are in the zoo of the landscape. Namely, you can have anything you want. You want adjoint representation, you get it. You want Wilson lines, you get it. Whatever you want, you get it. But here, you cannot get adjoint. You cannot get Wilson line. You don't have those choices. But you have this other mechanism available. And that's what we're going to be using, namely using this U1 flux to break an SU5 eight-dimensional gut. So this is the minimal one. The minimal unification you want is SU5 in eight dimension. And you break it with the U1 flux down directly to a four-dimensional MSSM. If you wanted to say, no, I like the SO10 a lot because, you know, they have these nice neutrinos in it. I want the SO10. Fine. We can have eight-dimensional SO10 living on the Southern Brain. But then you cannot go through the usual path of the usual embedding of SU5 in SO10. But in the flipped format, you can get it. So in 4D, you get the flipped SU5 cross U1. And then the 10 would break it to the MSSM. So in this talk, I will mainly focus on, even though we have studied both of these in our paper, in this talk, I'm mostly going to focus on the other side. Sorry? Oh, OK. Thank you. So a minimal example here, I'm just drawing pictorially how it would look. As I said, the matter arises on the curves. So for example, here, I have these, here we have drawn this black geometry is the Southern Brain with an SU5 gate symmetry on it, some kind of Del Pezzo. The blue curve denotes here where I get the matter curves, the tens. That's where SU5 enhances to locally to a SO10. Over this red curve, I'll get the Higgs up. That's where SU5 enhances local to SU6. And the other one, Higgs down, I get from this green one. Again, SU5 enhances to SU6. And over this purple one, I'm getting the matter 5 bar. Again, SU5 enhances to SU6. And then these various intersection points is where you get your Yukawas. Now, notice that all of these intersections are triple intersection, except for these two, which are double intersection. These are where the 5 and 5 bars meet. And for them to actually complete to interaction, you need there's some other curve automatically meeting them. So in other words, if Higgs up and Higgs down meet here, then automatically there's another curve by the geometry forces up, sticking out of the Del Pezzo in the normal direction. So here you'll have something neutral, and again something neutral here, which here would correspond naturally to right-handed neutrinos. The number of matter fields, how do I get a certain number? It's a very simple story there. The matter lives on the Riemann surface, and they couple to the gauge fields which live on the brains. And so you just solve Dirac equation. And so the zero modes of Dirac equation correspond on the Riemann surface, and nothing fancy like Calabi-Yau. Just the zero modes of Dirac operator on the Riemann surface gives you your matter content. And depending on how many zero modes you have, you get a different number of matter fields. Very simple. Well, how do you get the Yukawa couplings? Simple. And this is where the thing's going to get interesting. Where they meet, the Riemann surfaces meet at the point. You compute the zero-mode wave functions. The product of the zero-mode wave function will give you the Yukawa couplings. Now, this is going to be interesting, because precisely what these wave functions are will determine, amazingly, very crucially, what this Yukawa coupling is going to be. And of course, if the curves don't meet, the Yukawa coupling is zero automatically. Okay, so now I come to resolution of some of the puzzles. How could it be, this is the triple double splitting problem, how could it be that the Higgs multiplet in four dimension have no like triplets? We just have the doublet. We don't want the triplets. They're very bad for various phenomenological reasons. How come we just get the doublet, whereas the matter representations come nice, got multiplets, five, tens, and so on? This sounds not fair somehow. What is going on? The answer is very simple. What you are doing is that you have turned on the flux, and you can compute various cycles, and some of the cycles will have zero flux, the ones which are orthogonal to the direction of flux, and some of them will have some component parallel to the flux. This is a discrete choice. It's not a continuous tuning. You just have either zero flux or some integer flux. It's a quantum, it's a quantized story. So if the U1 flux on the Higgs is not zero, then you would have different amount of zero modes for triplet and doublet. It doesn't have to be equal. And therefore, if you have an appropriate flux turned on, you actually indeed can easily arrange just to get the doublet without the triplet. Very simple. But in the matter curves, if the net flux is zero, you will not get a different index for the triplet and doublet. You get the same index problem. You get equal number of triplet doublets. So just the very fact that the flux is parallel, orthogonal, and versus to having some component in parallel distinguishes Higgs versus the regular matter. Very simple. Okay, now that we have some success here, why is it that the mass of the particles in a given generation do not satisfy the relations coming from God? For example, the famous relation of the MB equals to M tau, which is a relatively good relation at the God scale, seems to be good for the third generation. But what about the other ones? The lighter ones seem not to be working so well. What's going on there? Well, the answer is also not that difficult to come by, because here we said that in the matter curves, the net flux is zero, but it doesn't mean the field strength of the hypercharge is identically zero. In fact, it's not. Now, the triplets and doublets experience different anomalies as they go around these curves because they have different charges corresponding to this U1. So their wave functions will not be the same because the U1s are different, though they will have equal number of zero modes. They come in the Gott multiplet, but they will have different wave functions because of this Aronoff-Bohm phase as they go around various paths in this torus or in this Riemann surface. Therefore, they will not give you the same. They will not give you the same wave functions, and the Yukawa couplings comes from the product of the wave functions, and therefore, the thing that experiences the masses will not necessarily be the same for the elements in a given multiplet. So, under which conditions should they have become equal? Well, if the wave functions were the same, how can you make the wave functions the same? If you take the parameters of the Delpezzo and shrink the Riemann surface, then the field strength would necessarily have to be very small. Otherwise, it would be inconsistent with the energy consideration. So if you have a small Riemann surface, the flux is very small. So the Aronoff-Bohm phase is going to be tiny. And therefore, in that case, at least, you expect some Gott relations. It turns out that the mass is inversely proportional to the area of these spheres. So the smaller you make these curves, the more massive the generation is, the less the Aronoff-Bohm discrepancy between the different elements of the multiplet, thus explaining why the triplet doublet could be, why the Gott relations could be satisfied, better satisfied, for the most high light, for the heaviest generation, but not for the lightest. And that just comes from a simple analysis of why the Yukawa couplings go like 1 over the volume. So a very simple fact. How is the mu problem solved? In other words, why is it that the Higgs field does not have a mass of the order of Gott? How to avoid dangerous baryon violating turns? Well, in some sense, already, let me first talk about the baryon-violating terms. I'm time, I'm sorry. Okay, well, okay, sorry about that. I have to go on a little bit more. So if you take, I said that the index for triplet doublet requires that you get doublet and then not the triplet bar. So therefore, this in particular means that the Higgs up and Higgs down, which is 5 and a 5 bar, will come from different curves, not on the same curve. And as soon as they are not in the same curve, you automatically avoid the dangerous baryon-violating terms. So just the very fact that Higgs up and Higgs down are on different curves automatically solve these bad operators which violate baryon number. A very simple mechanism. Again, the same thing solve both problems. Also, the very separation solves the mu problem in two ways, in one of two possible ways. One is, mu is zero. They don't meet. They're just two different curves. Who said they should meet? They don't meet. Mu is zero. Okay. That's one way, which is possible. And but there's a more interesting way, I would say, that they still meet, but you will have this third curve sticking out from the seven brain onto the normal geometry. So there will be another field living on this seven brain. You get the Yukawa coupling of the form singlet 5 and a 5 bar with the Yukawa coupling. It's true that the wave of this singlet, you can estimate for us, it would be of the order of gut. So that's true. But who said what lambda is? Lambda is the overlap of wave function. And naively, you might say it's of order 1. That's the usual mu problem. Mu problem says, why should lambda be anything but than order 1? So as I said, the mass scale for x comes out to be of the order of gut up to some little correction. But it turns out the very assumption that we are making that the del petto is decoupled from gravity tells you that the wave functions of this normal singlet, the singlet which lives on this normal surface, has an exponential behavior on the curvature. This is the usual lambda wave functions. This is, after all, a B field. And you're trying to solve a zero mode for an operator. And it would depend on the sign of the B field, or the curvature that you have. And there are two possible signs, plus or minus, depending on what is the sign of the curvature. So in one choice of sign, you get the usual M gut story that there's nothing, it's order 1. That's the case where the wave function is attracted to our brain. In the other case, the wave function is repelled from our brain by exponential amount. And in that case, you get a natural hierarchy of the form exponential minus 1 divided by epsilon to the 2 gamma, where epsilon is this hierarchy between m gut and m Planck divided by alpha gut, which is about 0.07. So if you take gamma as of the order of, let's say, 0.64 or something, this gives you the weak scale automatically. So in some natural range, you get the right parameter. Of course, some tiny change changes dramatically, so we cannot be claiming to get necessarily the weak scale, but we can easily get it. OK, so this is what I already mentioned. Anyhow, using these ideas, you can actually get the neutrino mass estimates rather naturally. In one scenario, in the scenario where you get the hierarchically small nu term, just the same thing I told you about the Higgs up and Higgs down, the mu term also applies to neutrinos, because the right-handed neutrinos are also singlet. And it turns out in that case, you get the Dirac neutrino mass, which you can get an estimate, which is slightly more than higher naive seesaw mechanism would predict. The seesaw will give you some scale like this. We get a suppression factor, we get an enhancement factor by alpha times m Planck divided by m gut, leading to a slightly better results in comparison with the experiment than the naive seesaw. In the second scenario, where we assume that the right-handed neutrinos wave function is not repelled but attracted to our brain, that's the second one, we get something which looks roughly like a seesaw, but with some modified parameters. For example, instead of this Majorana mass being the m gut, we get a suppression factor of epsilon to the 4 gamma. It's a huge suppression. And then there's an alpha to 3/4 there, which leads to this heavy neutrino masses of the order of 10 to the 12 GeV. I apologize for running over time. Thanks.
According to your philosophy of decoupling the Planck scale, does that mean you're committing to something like gauge-mediated supersymmetry breaking instead of, you know, gravity mediation or anomaly mediation, which are more UV-sensitive? Because you might take the opposite point of view. You'd like string theory to say something about those, yes, UV-sensitive mechanisms.
Right. I would say gauge mediation is much more natural in the context that you're dealing with, yes.
Why is that?
Because the idea would be very simple. You take the seven brain and the communication with the seven brain intersecting the seven brain is a very natural way to break supersymmetry. So that's because you have to describe within our local description.
OK, but the gravity mediation is always available.
You could also do it. I'm not saying it's unique. I'm saying it's simple, certainly easier to do. Yes. Oh.
Kumran, by the time you've imposed all of the various constraints that you'd like to impose, how rich is the landscape that's left over?
The conditions that I impose?
Yeah, all the things that you would like to be true.
Well, I basically said more or less that is, it's very small. Namely, the del pezzo, the 7-brain should be wrapped on a del pezzo. And del pezzo is unique, namely del pezzo 8, but it has 8 complex parameters and 8 for the complex structure of it.
No fluxes left over there?
8 cases. There are discrete choices of fluxes, but actually, I forgot to say, the choice of the flux which gives you no exotics is unique. Namely, that if you choose, the cycles inside del pezzo are classified by the roots of the E group. It turns out it has to be a root of E for it to have no exotics. So there's not much.
So would you say then that if this turns out to be right, it falsifies the idea that the solution of the cosmological constant problem is anthropic?
This does not bear on the question called it still could be related or not related to anthropic. You could say even this could be a
just one cut. Enough, there just aren't enough.
This time. Could be one cut, but what's going in the box? I haven't told you anything about. I've just told you what is. I haven't told you what is living on the whole. 6 manifold. So I have to emphasize, this is a bottom-up approach. I'm not constructing.
Wait. Are you telling me that it is much less unique than you said?
No. The construction, the relevance of the gut is pretty unique. You see, the question
no,
is...
No. Is the whole setup completely unique?
Depends on what question you ask. If you ask
the whole
question,
setup, just the whole thing.
The question of where you get your
Don't
gut...
Don't waffle. Just yes or no. Is it unique?
I would be glad to give a yes or no I don't want to misrepresent myself. I want to make sure that I don't miscommunicate. What I'm saying is that if you are asking questions about how I get my SU5 or quark or this and that, it's very unique.
Yeah,
but if you ask me, what is cosmological? So very far from unique. You still have to tell me what is going on the rest of the Calabi-Yach, what is making your supersymmetry. I have no, I'm not controlling it.
Right. Okay, that's good. Thank you.
So you had this gamma parameter in all your equations, which was very important to determine the mass case. Could you explain a bit more where it comes from?
Oh, yeah, sorry, I should have mentioned. So the gut is coming from the 7-brain, which is del pezzo. There's a normal geometry to it. The gamma is the eccentricity of the normal geometry. If it's tubular, you get one value of gamma. If it's flat, you get the other. So the range is whether the normal geometry is flat or tubular. That's what determines gamma between 1 and 1/3. We didn't know what to assume, basically. We just let it be like that.
A couple of questions. First of all, do you have any concrete model?
So the models that I told you about were concrete, yes.
No, explicit, with 3 families and so on.
Yeah.
Okay. And I think it's related to Lenny's question. Model stabilization you have included?
No, we have not. Definitely not. We have just said... We don't know which mechanism is fixing these moduli. Of course, there's a huge number of mechanisms people have studied in the context of F-theory for this moduli stabilization. So the main approach we're taking is a bottom-up approach, rather than top-down approach. We don't want to say fix everything and then deduce what numbers you have. I want to start with what I know experimentally, and I say, well, this and that has been fixed by somehow. Let me see what else can I learn. That's the approach we're taking. So we are not as ambitious as we usually are in string theory to try to get everything. But we're hoping to get something. That's our hope.
And the last thing is also in the mu problem, the issue about the mu problem is to compare the parameter mu, which is supersymmetric, to the scale of supersymmetric breaking. But if you haven't broken supersymmetries precisely, how can you compare the two things?
Well, there are two faults to the mu problem. So in our scenario, the breaking of supersymmetry does not belabor getting a mu term. In some sense, we don't need it anymore. So usually, since mu is so small, people try to get the mu term from the supersymmetry breaking. Now you don't need it. If you have a natural way to get mu being small, which we have.
No, but the two parameters have to be equally small.
Yeah. So your question is, I take your question slightly differently. I would say that in our context, mu can be of the order of the weak very naturally. That's fine. But that doesn't solve everything. You also have to get the right supersymmetry scale. And that's a different question, which I haven't addressed, and we are working on that.
Cut this short and leave it for lunch discussion. People are getting hungry. So let's thank Professor Pfaffer again. For those of you who have